Welcome to the Dr. K Show. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeld, a naturopathic doctor with nearly four decades of clinical experience, author and owner of the Karlfeld Center. Here, we dive deep into the worlds of health, consciousness, self-improvement, spirituality, and the topics others might shy away from. Every week, I'll bring you thought-provoking discussions with leading authors, groundbreaking scientists, Nobel Prize winners, and experts shaping the future of our understanding. Together, we'll explore ideas that inspire transformation and elevate your health and purpose. Don't forget to check out the free ebook, The Science and Spirit of Transformation, available in the show notes. It's packed with actionable insights to help you on your journey of self-discovery and optimal health. And while you're here, hit follow, leave a review, and share the show with someone who needs a dose of inspiration today. Well, what an absolute delight. I have Professor Linda Schiller with me. This is going to be a fascinating discussion about ancestral dreaming. This is going to be amazing. So thank you so much, Linda, for being with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
So I'm really curious. You taught over at Boston University and you have a quite illustrious academic career. And what brought you into looking into dreaming as getting clues in regards to what's going on in people's lives?
Great. So I started more traditionally as a psychotherapist, working in agencies, working in private practice, moving into private practice and teaching. And the way I got into dreaming was a friend of mine moved to Boston. And she said, you know, Linda, I don't miss anything about living in New York City except my dream group. So I'm going to start one in Boston. And will you be in my dream circle? And I said, yes. And then I said, what's a dream circle? So something in me knew to say yes, even before I really knew what I was saying yes to. And that was 40 plus years ago. So it has, from that moment in time, I've been learning and reading and going to workshops and conferences ever since. And I've been in my own dream circle, the one she started for 40 years. It'll be 40 years this year. We just figured it out. And I just fell in love with the ability to really use these fascinating nighttime journeys to help us understand, solve problems, heal at multiple layers of being, of our soul, our spirit, as well as our body and our mind. And dreams, I call them sort of like the quickest way in to the deepest part of ourself. And working with dreams allows us to sort of have a fast track into what our soul really needs and wants to know. And that's how I got started, really. And then somewhere along the line, joined my organization, IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which has been just a wonderful community of dreamers from all over the world. And they've mentored me, and I teach there, and I teach all around the world. And I'm actually very excited. I'm going to be teaching in New Zealand in March. If any of you ever had a dream of coming to New Zealand, you can learn dream work with me in New Zealand. So that's exciting.
That sounds amazing. What better? I'm in New Zealand and learning about your dreams, the deeper part of yourself.
And for the man, thank you, from Boise, Idaho, our international conference in June is going to be in Ashland, Oregon. So around the corner from you.
Oh.
Think about it.
Yeah. That's a yes. So I'm curious. So in one little kind of idea that struck me in your book, in Ancestral Dreaming book that just came out, you said, we are the dreams of our ancestors. To me, that was such a powerful statement. I mean, did you mind elaborating a little bit about on that?
Sure. So at several levels of being, that's true, that in a physiological sense, we carry in our blood cells the DNA of our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents. So at one level, we are carrying literally that bloodline of our ancestors all the way back. So that's one way of understanding it. Another way is that when our ancestors were alive, they had a hope and a vision for what they either imagined or wished that their descendants would have in their life, either as good as theirs if they were lucky enough to have a good life, or better than theirs if they struggled and had trauma and displacement and war and famine and all those things in their life. So they would dream, both literally at night and in their imagining, of a better life and a better world for their children and their children's children. So there's that sense of being the dreams of our ancestors as well. And then the third layer to that would be the epigenetic layer. I don't know if you want me to go into that now or save that till later.
Yeah, so do you mind explaining epigenetic? Because that is something, because you had these studies in regard to the people living in Auschwitz and then seeing several generations later, you know, the people that were related or offspring from the people in Auschwitz, the concentration camp, they were as if they were in Auschwitz. You know, they were experiencing the same panic, anxiety, disorders as if they were in a concentration camp. So that epigenetic changes a bit from generation to generation to optimize your survival or optimize to have a better chance to do better, it is fascinating to me.
So what I learned as I did research for this, that the word epigenetics, epi means on or above or on top of. So it's sort of on top of our genetic code. So we inherit things from our ancestors like blue eyes or blonde hair in a sort of literal genetic sense. We also inherit traits, styles, and emotional resonances from the people who we grew up with and the people they grew up with and the people they grew up with. So there's, again, there's two layers here. One is, and this was fascinating to me, I learned that every woman has inside of her before she's born, when she's a fetus in her mother, all the eggs in her ovaries she will ever have in her lifetime. So what that means is that we were present inside of our grandmothers when our mothers were fetuses inside of their mothers or our grandmothers. So it kind of blew me away, the literalness of that. So that's one piece of the epigenetics. The other is, and that as a naturopathic doctor, that body mind are two sides of the same coin and they're intricately entwined together. So what happens to us in our life affects us both emotionally and physiologically. When we have feelings, it's because we feel them in our physical bodies. So what our ancestors went through and the emotional feelings as well as the physical things that they had to go through get transmitted at a epigenetic layer into their DNA and actually through methylation make changes in the encoding of the bloodstream. And this gets passed down from generation to generation. So even if we didn't live through something, it's as if a part of us did because of this genetic encoding on top of how we're parented. So if we're parented by people who had trauma in their life and they lived their life as nothing in the world is safe, I have to look over my shoulder all the time, you always have to be on the lookout or you won't survive. That's how they parented their children. And that's the message their children got to then parent their children and so on. So one of the beauties, though, of understanding this epigenetic layer is that this is not cast in stone like the color of your eyes, though nowadays I guess you can put different color contacts in, but it still doesn't change the color of your eyes. It's malleable and able to be changed. So when we become aware of what we're carrying from previous generations that isn't actually ours, then we have the ability to change that story and change that message in our life.
So do you feel that this almost sounds like there's a genetic and energetic genetic components, like a whisper from prior generations that are there encoded on top of our genes?
Right.
And that whisper or that message, we have then the ability to access that. And a good place is obviously when we are not functioning on that executive conscious level, but we're more in that dream state. We're able then to access that whisper and either benefit or process that or heal from it.
You said it beautifully. Couldn't have said it better myself. Yes. When our prefrontal cortex, our thinking brain, is quiet, is either asleep or in a near sleeping state, we're not interfering with some of our ability to access our body wisdom or our higher wisdom and connect with things that are not necessarily rational and linear. So either through our actual dream states when we're asleep at night, or what I've called dream adjacent states, such as that hypnagogic zone just before you're falling asleep at night, but you're not quite awake or asleep, or guided imagery, or trance work, or simply tuning in to the synchronicities on purpose with consciousness as you walk around in your daily waking life.
And so with these kind of, the challenge obviously is to be able to kind of bring that message into kind of your conscious world and to be able to, I would assume, create alterations or create healings from it. I mean, so what are some of the ways that a person can access this information that a lot of us dream, but we don't remember, and we wonder, is this something that's important, or is this just my mind going all over the place, kind of like it does sometimes during the day?
Right. So for starters, if you are willing, or our listeners are willing, to have like the willing suspension of disbelief and really get it, the dreams are a valid other state of consciousness where we can learn things and gain wisdom and gain information and gain knowledge. That's sort of the first step, to kind of accept there is something I could get that would benefit me in some way, that would be fun, or that would be helpful, or that would be useful if I remembered my dreams and could get the messages from them. So that would be step one, to care about it and think it would be valuable. And then step two, because you're right, our dreams are like wisps of smoke. We wake up in the morning, we sit up fast, and they're gone. So in order to remember our dreams, we have to have a way to record them. So I always encourage people to have their dream journal right by their bed at night, so they can wake up either first thing in the morning, or if they have the discipline in the middle of the night, to write it down right away before it's dissipated in the busyness of the day. I have a little book light that I've got clipped on my journal so I don't disturb my husband when I write down a dream. And for people who just can't bring themselves to write, it's okay if you dictate it into your phone or your device, but then I encourage you to write it out later, to transcribe it, because you get an additional piece of knowledge when you're writing that comes through, because it becomes a physical transcription then, as well as just the auditory that you might get.
And so when you're doing that, and I would assume it's like when you are trying to look at a picture from afar, in the beginning it's hard to make out what it is, but as you get better and better at it, and it's kind of like your body knows, or your consciousness knows, that this is information that we're looking for, then as it's kind of like stepping closer and closer to a painting, and you start to see it clear more and more clearly as you practice, and being able then to discern whether this information is something that could be really beneficial, or maybe it was something that wasn't.
So it's a good analogy. And there's actually, I'm blanking on the word, or I'm not blanking it, but I can't pronounce it. I think it's called cheruschismo. It's when there's a painting underneath another painting. Someone's painted on top of a painting. And then there's a technique where you can then peel that top layer off and find what's buried underneath the hidden layer of the painting. So it reminded me of that when you were making that analogy. And some dreams come through that are primarily processing the storm and strong of the life you had yesterday or today. You're reviewing it in your mind, you're digesting it, you're metabolizing bits and pieces of information, which in and of itself is very useful. There's been studies done that people actually do better on tests if they review the material the night before and dream about it and have an intention of dreaming that they're going to succeed on their test. So it can be very, very useful. And you can also look at the multiple layers of every dream. Some people might not be interested or they might not have the time, but there are multiple simultaneously true layers in every dream. So whatever your sort of surface layer is like, oh yeah, this is about that. That's true. But then underneath that top layer of the painting, there are several other layers. And as we peel those layers, we go deeper and deeper through the emotional story and the familial story and the ancestral story and the world story that Jung would call connecting with our collective unconscious, that dreams can take us through as well.
That's incredible. It's kind of like I remember when I was teaching actually at the University of Judaism. I mean, I'm not Jewish, but a good friend of mine is a rabbi. And we were talking about the scriptures in the Old Testament. And he was saying, well, you can kind of read the initial meaning when you read the verse, but there are actually like at least seven layers of understanding of that text with numerology and how the words were used and all of that. So there's several layers as you dig deeper and deeper in understanding of that one verse. So it almost sounds exactly like that. You have kind of the initial that you see, but as you then dig deeper, then it can connect to something quite grand. And you're all talking about that kind of world consciousness almost through that message.
You know, it's really interesting because I didn't speak about it just now, but it's as if you read my first book, Modern Dreamwork, which I don't think you did, because I have put together a method of looking at the layers of dream based exactly on reading Tanakh, reading the Torah.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And it's called the Pardes system. And in Hebrew, the word Pardes, the literal meaning is orchard, and it's an acronym. The P, R, D, and S stand for a word in Hebrew. And the P stands for pshat, which is simple, or the first top layer. The R stands for remez, which is the hinted at layer. The D is for drash, which is the revealed or pursued layer. And then the S is for sod, which would translate as the secret or mystical or transpersonal layer. And these are the layers when you're working through Kabbalah that you read the Torah in. And that's actually exactly what I did with dreams. So it's amazing that you made that analogy just now.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I haven't read your first book, and I love this book.
Thank you.
But I know that I'm going to love your first book then, yeah, as well.
Oh, thanks. But that's just like sort of blows my mind. Here's a great synchronicity. Like, who would have thunk it? This gentleman from Boise, Idaho, who's taught at some kind of Hebrew college.
No, all that fascinated me so much. And like the tree of life, the different sephiroths, and the journey that you do from Malka to Ein Sof. And I mean, all of that is fascinating to me.
You know more than a lot of people who've studied this stuff for a long time, too.
Oh.
Yeah, because I do work with the tree of life and with Thoreau.
So how does that play into then dreams? I'm really curious.
So there's several ways it can play into dreams. The tree of life is a metaphor, an analogy, and it's a symbol that is actually transpersonal and shows culture after culture. I want to say everywhere in the world, but I don't know if it's everywhere, but everywhere that I know of, from Norse mythology to the Maori to Jewish and Christianity, to there's this tree. There's this tree of life. And in Kabbalah, it's depicted upside down. So the roots are in heaven and the branches are here on the ground, which means that's where our soul is, roots are, is up there in the spirit world. And our roots then and our branches become simultaneous. And if we think of that as a metaphor for our families and our ancestors, where are our roots, right? They're in our branches and in the roots of our family tree. So all of these things show up in multiple ways in dreams, whether it's through symbol or metaphor or in a dream. If you have a tree, we look at the tree in general, the tree from a natural perspective. We look at what kind of tree? Is this a eucalyptus tree or an oak tree or a cypress tree? Because that'll make a difference in your dream. So there are many layers of metaphor and symbolism connected with this tree of life. And then the spherot, which are the sort of the emanations of the divine, have different qualities to them. And that sort of corresponds with the chakra system. It's very similar. There's a center pole that really corresponds with the chakras.
Yeah, and I know we're teaching you had the letter or the name of God written upon us with the Ain. We have Yahweh. So it's always was fascinating as we were kind of assessing the body and seeing kind of in within that tree of life or within that flow where there were discrepancies because you have all these different pathways in the tree of life that you can then meditate and study. And yeah, it's fascinating. So how in dreaming then, because we talked about all these different components. So can a person, let's say there's a trauma, I've talked a little bit about the Auschwitz, but there can be trauma that maybe somebody a few generations ago had a difficult life, they committed suicide or there was something.
Right.
And that part, that generational, that line needs healing in some way. Because that energy is then impacting us with that energy being on top of our DNA, the epigenetic. So is there a way then to use dreams to be able to heal that event since the dreams then go across time?
Yes. So in dream work, it's always now. We don't dream yesterday this happened or tomorrow this is going to happen. It's happening right now in the dream. And being in the now is also what it means to be, what I learned from one of my teachers, one of my rabbis, is that sacred time. When the past and the present and the future meet simultaneously, when we're not thinking about time as linear, but rather as circular and spiraling. So when we have that view of time and that understanding of the sacredness of dream time, then it's not at all a stretch to take what we have dreamt about and then travel in waking, journeying, whether it's guided meditation or it's purposeful journaling or working with a group, to go back to connect with people who are no longer alive, embodied in the world, to either receive their blessings, receive their wisdom, acknowledge and appreciate them from sort of one direction. And then the other direction, if they died in pain and with trauma and unhealed, for us to send them energy, light, healing, messages, and help them finish the journey for their spirit to be intact. So they can fully go all the way over to wherever spirits go when they die. And then we get to pass on that healed message from them through to ourselves. So we're passing on the message and integrating the healing for ourselves, and then can pass it on to our descendants, our children, our students as well, rather than the message of pain.
So it would essentially have like a ripple effect then through both, not just in your life, but then moving back in time. But then also, since we are shifting then the kind of the epigenetic, kind of using the physical term, the epigenetic structure of our genes, you know, as we're changing the message, it will then impact future generations as well.
Right. So we're really working with the space-time continuum here. And I say that both tongue-in-cheek, but not tongue-in-cheek as well. And if we have sent the messages and done the exercises and the imagery and worked with our ancestors who have suffered, and they experience enough healing to be able to completely move into spirit, we get that resonance. And then even if our children, right, are already born or we have grandchildren, so it's not just literally, but we're going to start parenting differently. And our energy field is going to be different as a result of having healed, which will then affect the people around us. So there's a couple ways that ripple can happen.
And so it is there, because sometimes a person just, they feel depressed, they feel anxious, they feel panic attacks, and they look upon their life and they say, there's really no reason for me to not or to feel these feelings. You know, I have a great job, love my family, no stress or financial stress. I mean, everything's just perfect, and still I'm feeling this. So is there a way for a person then to start to investigate to see if there are things in prior generation that may have impacted you?
Yeah, it's a great question. There are a couple things. The first thing I would always recommend is see some kind of a medical professional to make sure there's not something physiologically going on causing this. So we'll start with the ground floor. And once it's been determined, whether it's Western medicine or naturopathic medicine or Eastern medicine or whatever works for you to determine, okay, there's nothing I'm finding here that explains my panic attacks or my depression, then the next step would be to say, okay, let me look at my life. And as you said, if I can't find anything in my life, then look at your family tree. And I encourage people, and I give examples in the book of how to build a genogram, a family tree. So I encourage people to create a family tree and ask your parents and your grandparents or whoever's still alive for as much information as you can. Because once they've passed, you can't ask them in physical form anymore. And see what's going on in your family history as far back as you can. Are there family cutoffs? Did somebody not talk to someone? And either they know why or they don't know why. Is there a family history of depression? Did great Aunt Susie spend her life in a special home for the last 40 years? And nobody knows why, but something was going on that she had to be in a special home for 40 years, right? And it reminds me of the show with Bill Gates Jr., Finding Your Roots. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen that, where he brings out these ship's manifests and all this fascinating history that people discover, both that they were the descendant of a king or queen, or they were the descendant of a slave or a slaveholder, for that matter. So you can get information about what happened before, even if it wasn't in your life. And then the last thing I'll say for this moment is, if you're wondering about why am I struggling with X, or why am I attracted to Y? It doesn't even have to be a struggle. Incubate a dream. And incubating means asking your dreams to give you answers to questions. It's as simple as before you go to sleep at night, write down what you're wondering about. You can spend 5 minutes, you can spend a half an hour, whatever feels good, but end with a question that's as clear and specific as you can make it. And then write down the dreams you get on the same page as the question. And there will inevitably be a connection between the question you're asking and the dream you receive. You might need to dream through that question more than one night, and you might need to peel back the layers of your dream to find the meaning, but it'll be there.
And you were mentioning different trees, like eucalyptus tree would have one meaning, another tree would have another meaning. Yeah. Is there a certain toolbox that an individual would need in order to be able to understand their dreams? Or is this something that they subconsciously will gain clarity as they continue?
So one of the ethics of IASD, the association, is that the dream belongs to the dreamer, meaning I can't tell you what your dream means, but I will have resonances and associations to your dream. So if we were doing dream work together, for example, and you said, I dreamed about a eucalyptus tree, I can't say, oh, that means this. But I can say, if that were my dream, I might be wondering about X or Y. And then we'd look at the different layers. What is a tree to you? And then we'd go look up on our friend, Dr. Google, right? What is a eucalyptus tree? Where do eucalyptus trees grow? And what are the qualities of a eucalyptus tree compared to an oak or a cypress? And it's fascinating what comes through when you do a little research about the symbol that's come through in your dream, how very often that connects you with like an aha of something. And there's lots and lots and lots of books out there that can help you learn to understand symbol and metaphor and association, as well as your own felt sense and connections.
Because there are certain symbols, like we talked about the global consciousness, or even kind of beyond the global, where it's through space-time continuum. There are certain, through cultures, through religions, certain symbology that is fairly strongly ingrained in our consciousness because we are connected to everything. So I would assume that there's certain symbology that would be similar across the board, or very likely similar.
Yes. So we might start with the general common association. So if someone is dreaming of water, for example, very often that has to do with emotion. That's a seems to be a common thread cross-culturally around the world. But then we get specific. Are we dreaming of a tsunami, or drinking a glass of water, or swimming in a clear lake? There are lots of different ways we could be dreaming of water, right? So that's one of those kind of symbols. And a house often is seen as a symbol or metaphor for our body. And literally, if you're dreaming of something in the attic, it might be something in your unconscious. If you're dreaming about the wiring of the house or the plumbing in the house, actually, I had a gentleman who came in with issues around plumbing, and we worked with the dream. And finally, we said, you know, you need to go see a doctor and get your physical plumbing checked to see whether or not anything's going on in there. And sure enough, turns out he had early stage prostate cancer, and he got it treated quickly because he had the dreams of plumbing and followed up on them.
So, and as a naturopath, we always talk about symptoms as the body's way of communicating as to what's going on in the body. So instead of using medications to suppress the symptom, try to really listen to it and understand and then address it. So it seems like in the dreams, we can then not only through symptoms, but in our dreams, we can communicate about if there's something that needs to be corrected in our physical health now, in addition to obviously generationally.
Yeah. So in a way, our dreams are another form of naturopathic medicine, actually, or can be when we understand what they're saying to us.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that our conscious mind can only process so much information. Our subconscious mind, I mean, it's exponentially more the amount of information that can be processed and held there. So to be able to access that reservoir of information, I mean, that's such a gift. And then dream seems, from my understanding, seems to then be a very good way to be able to access that.
Right. And we can do a lot of work on our own by writing down our dreams, working to understand them, looking things up. And I also always recommend for people to, if possible, work with someone else, with a partner or a dream circle, a dream group, because it's like trying to see the back of our own head without a mirror. We can't really see all the way down unless we have someone who has a different perspective to help us see it. That's why Carl Jung himself said that he always had to work with a partner to get to the bottom of his dreams.
And are there, I would assume there are societies that are really heavy tradition where dreams play a really, really important role. I mean, do you mind sharing a little bit about, you know, so we as Americans have an understanding of dreams and how that is used in other cultures?
So pretty much every indigenous and native culture puts a high value on people who can communicate with the gods and with the planet. And the shamans and the medicine men and women of the tribes are usually those who are the best dreamers and have the best ability to help someone understand the meaning of their dream. And I've investigated in writing the book, and just from my own knowledge, several different cultures where this is the case, from Hawaiian, Native Hawaiians to Indigenous Native Americans. In March, as I mentioned, we're going to New Zealand. So I've started to read up more on the Maori culture in New Zealand and find remarkable similarities to our Native American history, including a terrible history of being trying to having their culture wiped out by colonizers. But in the reclaiming of it and the importance they put on dreams as well in Australia, right? It's called the creation of the world in Australia is called the dreaming, and it's dream time. And what a lot of people don't know is that in the Abrahamic traditions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, there's a big history of attention to, respect for dreams and dream work. So if we think back to the holy books in all three religions, there are dreamers whose work is respected and who changed the fate of the world because of the dreams. Joseph comes to mind as one of them.
Yes, very much so. And we know a lot of scientific discoveries. Essentially, it's somebody that just woke up and they just had realization in a dream, and they just woke up with it and they see things so clearly, and then they kind of map it all out. And here is a discovery that changes the world and how we view things.
Right. Einstein dreamt through E equals MC square. We don't sort of challenge that anymore. And what's really fun when we're thinking about ancestors and DNA, and I never remember if it was Crick or Watson, but Crick or Watson, who created the DNA model, one of the two of them had a dream about intertwining snakes. And then he woke up and said, "Eureka, I got the map.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was Watson, but okay. I'm not going to be 100%. Yeah. But it's fascinating to me that sea of universal knowledge that exists that we can tap in our dream time. And with the different cultures that have done this generationally, obviously anything that you do and the more you practice, the better you get. And if it's been taking place generationally and as a culture, then they are just going to be more able, it almost like they're born into it. But it's as Westerners, we should be able then to, as we learn this skill, become better and better and be able to benefit from it, learn what the discrepancy, so to say, or damages or traumas that's taken place in prior generation. And then being able to actually, you know, since time and space, it's all here and now, and be able to create healing in prior generations that then impact us. And yeah, so it's such a powerful tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're using a method. I know you talked about a method called Gaia. And so tell me a little bit about that and how that can be utilized in all of this.
Sure. So Gaia is another sort of acronym that I created for particularly around working with nightmares. And the acronym of Gaia stands for Guided Active Imagination Approach. And I base this on two branches. One is on Jungian style active imagination dream work. And the other is my training in EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, is an integrated body mind psychotherapy that I'm trained in. And the first part of that method is about resource installation, meaning you start with connecting with your strengths and your resources across the realms, right? Whatever makes you feel safe and protected before moving into looking at the scary, difficult, traumatic events that you're hopefully going to be reprocessing in the EMDR work. And so that's the second pillar of my Gaia method. And I love the acronym that has to do with our living, breathing earth, where we start when someone has a nightmare, rather than saying, well, let's talk about the scariest thing in your nightmare. And that can potentially re-traumatize someone from the nightmare if we go too fast, right, into the belly of the beast. So we start with first creating safety and resources before working with the nightmare material itself. And then in between those two legs is a bridge step. We are with all the resources we've gathered, whether it's your dog or a place in nature that calls to you or a dear friend or something that makes you feel safe and protected. You go with all that and you look at the nightmare without going into it to see if there's anything else that you might have missed or any resources that might already have been there that you didn't notice the first time telling. And then once you've done that, then we go into the scary stuff, but in a safe way.
I love it.
That's in essence the Gaia method.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a powerful, because that essentially a lot of people are battling nightmares and they don't know how to get out of that cycle. And obviously the nightmare is there for a reason, to try to communicate something.
Right,
And
that's right.
so to be able then, in a safe manner and without re-traumatizing, being able to kind of look at that, I mean, that's really powerful, and resolve that. So
And
wonderful.
it's something that, depending on the nature of the nightmare or the trauma, it's not necessarily just like one and done. You might need to do it a few times. And particularly paying attention that when we have repetitive dreams or repetitive themes, and if we have repetitive nightmares, chances is something that it's A, really important, and B, might take a little time to work through if it keeps coming back and coming back and coming back into your sleeping consciousness.
Yeah. Well, before we close, I know we talked about a couple of things, but is there an exercise or a couple of things that, for listeners that they can do tonight that would really have, so they can kind of start this journey? I mean, obviously, a lot of this is more explained in your book, Ancestral Dreaming, and I highly recommend people to utilize this kind of information and for their own benefit. But is there something that would be kind of an easy thing for them to try, and being able to get excited about learning from their own dreams?
That's a great way to sort of end a conversation like this. So if you have a journal around the house or a old spiral notebook, or I have here, I have a pad of paper, anything, put it by your bed with a pen or pencil that has ink and a point, right? Because you can't fool your unconscious. Have all the tools you need. And then go to sleep with two choices. One is the intention. In Hebrew, there's a wonderful word. It's called kavanah, from the word lekaven. And that means to point yourself in the direction. So have the kavanah, the intention of pointing yourself in the direction of remembering your dream, for starters, and the promise to yourself that you're going to write it down. Whether or not it makes sense, whether or not it thinks it means anything, whether or not it's one word. If you have one word, that's your dream. If you have an emotion that's not explained by your surroundings, that's your dream. So that's one thing. Get your recording material by your bed with an intention to write. And then if you want to take it a step further, think about if you have a question that you'd like an answer to. Should I be looking for a new job right now? Should I propose to the person I've been dating for a year? I've been having panic attacks. What is the source of them? I have an estrangement from someone in my family. What can I do to heal that? So it could be anything at all that has some feeling for you, some oomph, and write down the question and then record the dream on that page and see how it's related.
I love that. Love that. That's so, and that's the thing. Some of the most powerful solutions or tools are the simple ones. Yeah, just simple things. But to do it consistently, then you are creating that intention that this is what I'm looking for. And then, God, universe, consciousness knows to direct that information towards you, because you are kind of setting that strong intention with clarity. Great. Well, this has been so wonderful. I really appreciate this, Linda. And yeah, the book and Ancestral Dreaming, powerful book. And thank you for bringing these tools into our hands that we can use to understand ourselves, understand where we're coming from, and understand our place in the universe, in the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and such a pleasure talking to you. So nice to meet you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining me on the Dr. K Show. I hope today's episode sparked new ideas, challenged your perspective, or inspired you to take a step toward a healthier, more empowered life. Remember, you can download my free ebook, The Science and Spirit of Transformation, right now. It's waiting for you in the show notes. Don't miss this resource to deepen your understanding and continue your journey of growth. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review, follow us, and share this episode with friends or family. Your support helps us bring more enlightening conversations to listeners like you. Until next time, I'm Dr. Michael Carlfield, reminding you to live with purpose, curiosity, and courage.